All right, here we go. We ready?
I guess.
Welcome to M Vibes Podcast.
Home of good music,
good libations,
and good vibes.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of M Vibes Podcast. I think I'm right with this. Season 4, Episode 8. I believe that's right. Am I right? All right. I got it right.
You are correct.
Three shows
correct,
in a row.
Sir.
Three shows in a row. I got it right. So it's awesome. It's not too often. We don't actually pay attention, and then we
and then you
go
do.
Back and look at it again. I'm like, oh, shit, that was episode 20. Oops. Anyways, we're back at our home, sweet home, Tommy's Pub. We haven't been here in a while. It's nice to be back. Back in the old, I don't know what you call this little area back here. The cove at Tommy's.
Yeah, it's just the alcove at Tommy's.
Yeah. We got the drinks flowing again, as always. You already know what I'm drinking, but Tommy's. We've got Magners and Old Faithful Jameson. Ernest, what do you got there? What is that?
Well, I got the house bourbon, quality house from Heaven Hills.
Yeah.
And I got this new custom shop Keller beer from Devil's Logic, which is nice. Outstanding.
And, today we have a special guest. We got Tiff from No Anger Control. What are you drinking?
Well, if anybody knows me, rum and coke, and I have no idea what kind of rum it is.
It don't matter. It's his rum.
Exactly. Exactly. Probably.
Whatever Jeremy Radio tells him to get.
Yeah, Jeremy Radio now works here, so come on by on Sundays and see his tiki bar. Speaking of that, on the 16th, I think there's a pop-up market here with Gabba Gabba, huh? He's doing a pop-up market. I'll be on the ones and twos that day, spinning some tunes, and Jeremy will be behind the bar. So come on by Tommy's on the 16th. It'll be fun. A fun day and a Sunday. Fun day Sunday. So anyways, today we got, as I was saying, we got Jen from No Anger Control. So I don't know where to quite start. Where did No Anger Control start? How did that start?
No Anger Control started without me.
You're right.
They were a three-piece before I moved to Charlotte, and Jason, our bassist, and Levi, our guitarist, were singing, and they saw my band out of Raleigh, the Bamps, and it was John, my drummer, and Jason, and they came out. I guess they must have liked it, because a few months of me living in Charlotte after I divorced my ex-husband from the Raleigh band, John came up and was asking how the Bamps was doing. I said, we broke up. I said, I left the guitarist. I'm here now. And he said, well, we're looking for a singer because Jason and Levi just wanted to play. So they actually had an EP before I even joined the band. I don't even know if that still exists. It's out there somewhere.
I'm sure it is. I don't think it's on Spotify. So
I don't think so. I think they probably have it in like their garages and shit.
I've seen No Anger Control probably, I want to say, four or five times. If you guys ever have a chance to see them, come out and see them. Great show. She kicks ass. First time I saw them was actually here at Tommy's. Myself and Mike Thrower went to go see Soul Coughing at the Visual Light, and that show was over early. We're like, hey, let's go to Tommy's, go check out No Anger Control.
Mike.
And I said, who was that? He goes, he's like, man, just
oh yeah, Mike,
just,
definitely.
Come on, yeah,
that makes sense. I love Mike.
I love Mike. Mike Thrower. I actually met him through work as well. He's become a very good friend of mine. So actually, he'll be on the podcast. The next episode we're going to record is with Mike Thrower. We're going to do a now I'm drawing a blank. Les Claypool episode with
him. Oh, so, interesting.
Yeah, a lot of history with that dude. That'll be. That might be a two-hour-long episode.
I can see that.
Yeah, dude's done a lot of shit. So anyways, you guys just played last week.
Yeah, we played Snug.
I missed that show.
It was a good show. I got a black eye.
That's awesome.
You know it's a good show when your singer's going down in the pit.
I've had many mosh pit injuries. I have a scar above this side from a Mighty Mighty Boss Stones pit.
Oh, that makes sense.
I got a boot. Some dude was crowd surfing. I got a boot right in the face. I was bleeding all over the place. And everyone's like, dude, you need to go have it checked out. Fuck that. I ain't going anywhere,
yeah, I'm
man.
Fine.
I stayed in the pit. Bleeding all over, buddy, man.
Oh, I knew I had a black eye. I felt it. I could feel it, like that warm, warm feeling, and I went right back in, so obviously.
That's awesome.
Snug Harbor, you're practically in the crowd anyway.
Yeah, pretty much.
God, that fucking place is loud, though, man.
Oh, it sounded great.
Yeah, I once saw Nebula there not too long ago. Man, that was actually my first time there. I had never been there before.
I love Snug Harbor.
Man, that place was loud. But goddamn. It's like 1:30 in the morning. They were still playing. I'm like, all right, man, I have to work tomorrow. So
they don't. Yeah, no, not like we do.
Yeah. So I left. But that was a great show. There was a band on that bill from Winston-Salem called Holy Roller.
Yeah, I know them.
They were awesome.
Yeah, that's a good band.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a really good band, actually. Yeah. I like those guys.
I saw them again. They went to the Sepultura's show, which, by the way, was a letdown. I'm sorry, Sepultura. I'll never spend another dollar to go see Sepultura without Cavalera again. But I saw him there, and I was talking to him, and I'm like, hey, wait a minute. Don't you sing in a band? He goes, well, what band? I'm like, dude, don't fucking play with me.
I would do that. That I'm sounds like, great.
I know exactly who you are.
No, yeah. I would definitely do that. I hate when people recognize me. I should just be like, who are you talking about?
So how long has No Anger Control been around now? I think you guys formed them, 2012?
Yeah.
They did. You weren't with them in 2012.
Well, they formed in July of 2012, and I got inducted into the band in December.
Okay.
So we actually hit 10 years this past year, so we're actually getting a lot closer to 11.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I mean, that's fantastic. The longest band I had before that was 5 years, and I thought that was a feat.
Yeah. So,
and I still like them. That's really a feat.
Well, yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, I still love everyone that was in the podcast. We're not enemies by any means, but it sucks that they're all gone now, so whatever.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? So let's go through some of your history.
Huh.
In the bands you've been in. Mm-hmm. You already kind of touched on that, but if you don't mind.
So the first band I was in wasn't even a band for me. I think it was my senior year of college, and I just felt it was time. I'd always been singing. Like, I actually started out doing chorus and did voice lessons and did musicals, and I was the desk camp, believe it or not. Like, I could sing the highest you could get. And then I went to college and had a little bit too much fun and discovered punk and decided that I could do something better. And so the first band I joined was just basically because I wanted to join a band. I think we went through like 10 drummers. We practiced in the basement of a dorm. We were called Glass House, which is the worst fucking name ever.
I'm sure everyone loved you guys practicing.
Oh,
in the basement of a dorm.
I have no idea. And it was, the best part is it was like one of my ex-boyfriend's dorms, so I was really hoping.
It wasn't even your dorm?
No. It was an all-guys dorm.
Wow. Like,
what gets me is they went through 10 drummers. I mean, how many groups have we talked to?
That want drummers? Now, look, I'm going to put it this way.
Drummer.
A drummer that says they're a drummer isn't always a drummer. So
anyone can make a beat, but are you good at it? Yeah.
Yeah, especially if you're like, have you played for punk or metal or no? So some of it was just because I think they were like, we were still in schools. They had classes and we were seniors, so we actually had shit to do. But there was another singer, it was a male singer, and of course he and I started to hang out, and that's kind of where I dipped out, where I was like, nah, I don't like this dude. So I didn't even play the first show with them, and I heard their first show sucked, so I was really happy about that. But there was two members in that band that ended up forming another band like a year or two later, and they found this female drummer, Kim, and God knows, that was a beast of a drummer, and they were like, well, we want you to come try out vocals, like, you know, you're still looking to do something? Because I'd never actually done something at this point. I said, yeah, why not? So I come, it's my buddy Anthony, who I'm actually still friends with now. He lives in Charlotte, was on bass. And my friend Emily was playing guitar, and that's who had called me. And she's like, Ant's playing too. And that was enough for me because that's one of my best friends. And so I came and tried out, and I saw this drummer, and it was over. Like, I have so much respect for every drummer I've ever been in a band with, but I have never seen a drummer like this, and I probably never will ever again, but was also the worst person to ever put up with in a band. So, you know, and it
pros and cons, right?
Yeah, and we put up with it because we were in Greenville, North Carolina. You know, I went to ECU, and this is like, I was going to leave Greenville, and I stayed because of the band, and we formed what at that point was called Sheena's Wasted. And it was a little bit more Riot Girl. I had actually been through rape and abuse and was writing about stuff like that and talking about how this person couldn't hit me anymore and how I was going to fight back. And it was songs that kind of along that level. And people would actually wear shirts at our shows that would say, Sheena's Wasted. And on the back, it would say, and I am too. It was fantastic. Like, that was my name. Like, I came up with that, which, of course, the bassist later on was like, well, we sound like a Ramones cover band. And I was like, well, yeah, but Sheena was a punk rocker. She wasn't wasted. So
nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. But we ended up switching out some members, kept the drummer, kept the bassist, lost the guitarist, and brought in what is now my ex-husband. And we changed the name to Princess and the Criminals. And we became a little bit more of like a ska punk band at this point.
Ain't bad either.
No, it was fantastic. I actually really, we have two albums that was put out with that band. That was a band I was with for 5 years. And that was what kept me in Greenville, North Carolina way too long. But when you're together under a year and you're opening for Murphy's Law at the Soapbox.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. And Jimmy G also, we played with him as No Anger Control. And that is a gem of a human being. Super nice person. And the first time I met him was just over the top, like you expected him to be. Got a bottle of Jaeger and passed it around the crowd. And just lots of skinheads, lots of fun times. I mean, we were near Jacksonville, so. But, yeah, that was kind of my run for a while was Princess and the Criminals and toured with them. We played at Auto Shrunken Head up in New York. We played at the Meat Locker in New Jersey.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, we were playing up in Baltimore at the Sidebar. Like, we were going to, like, you know, known venues and playing. And not that we were always killing it, but we were doing it.
Yeah.
And that band had a following, and we were doing well, so we decided, let's take it to Raleigh. And by this point, we were down to three members, and we had kind of formed more into a 77 punk-sounding band called The Mighty Good Ship. And we have recordings, but we never put anything out because when we moved to Raleigh, this lovely drummer who I had put up with through three breakups, mind you, the first time a note on the practice space door, took her back because amazing drummer. Second time was an email to the band, and every time it was why we sucked. And then the last time was a Facebook message, and we had moved to Raleigh at this point. And this Facebook message was very hateful and then was like, we need to meet in public because she probably thought I was going to get really angry, which was true. And we met at a Borders, which should tell you how long ago that is. And
Mexican restaurant, right?
Yeah. No, it was like Barnes and Nobles, but shittier.
Okay. All right. Okay.
But we met at a Borders somewhere.
I like where your head's at.
I know. I thought I was thinking that too. I was like, I could go for some nachos. But
I'm a nachos freak. I'm a nachos sucker. Sorry.
Oh, man. But yeah, when she told us she had been playing with another band for like a month that she hadn't told us about, I'm like, well, shit. Guess I'm going to have to start another band. So that's when I formed the Bamps. That was the one band that I formed myself. It was with my ex-husband on guitar. And we stole this kid, Tim, from a solo project in another band that he was in, and I stole this kid Zeke from this band called The Home Wreckers. And the reason they were called The Home Wreckers is because they literally had broken up marriages to be together. And then they broke up, and they broke up the band. And then I took him. And we went through, I had a drummer at one point, was actually a kid I went to high school with who I legit put up with just so we could have a drummer because we needed a drummer that badly. So no 10 drummers this time around. There was, like, nobody. And my buddy Tim that's playing, he was playing rhythm guitar on the band. He's like, look, He's like, I know this kid that I used to play with. I don't even know if he likes me. I'm like, oh, man, this is not a good route to go. But he ended up playing with us, even though he apparently did not still like him. But he said that he would try it out. He was a metal drummer, and he would play double bass with us, and it was fantastic.
Nice.
So that was when we were called the BAMFs, Badass Motherfuckers, because we all love Pulp Fiction. And we were together probably about 2 years up in Raleigh, and we were starting to really take off there, too. And we came up here, and we played the Milestone twice. And it was probably around the second time we played the Milestone that I knew I was going to leave my ex-husband. And I knew I was about to break up a band. And I got to tell you, when I broke up that band, that poor bass player that came from the Home Wreckers was like, I'm never joining a band again. I was like, I saw it to be like, Zeke, I love you, but quit joining bands with couples then. Like, I didn't make that choice for you. But also, seriously, that dude would take a violin bow and play it on his bass. Still one of the coolest bass players ever.
Super talented.
Oh, he was super talented. Yeah, he would come into practice with, like, charts of music to show our guitarist, who had no idea what charts were. It was great.
Yeah, man, thanks. I don't know what I'm looking at.
But
thanks.
Yeah, it was good stuff. But that was probably actually the BAMFs. That was a really fun band for me, and I really miss that band sometimes just because it was different than everything else I had done. It was a little bit more rock and roll. I mean, it was good, but it was still punk. I wouldn't necessarily say 77 punk, which was always my ultimate goal. Like, that's my favorite.
Yes.
Although I would do new wave, like dark wave. But, yeah, the BAMFs was good, and when I moved to Charlotte and I left them, other than COVID, it was the longest time I'd been without a band. I think that was like 2 or 3 months. And then I met, you know, the guys in Hangar Control, well, at least John, our drummer, and he saw me at the Milestone because that was the only place I knew when I moved here. So I just kept going to Milestone shows. I'm like, I will find a band.
Yeah.
You know, you go out there enough, you're like, I will find a band. Like, you know, I've played there, so maybe someone will recognize me, and I ended up being right. And, you know, Hangar Control at that point had, you know, whoever was singing, playing instruments, and they didn't want to do that anymore. They just were willing to do backups. They still wanted to write and kind of be a part of everything, but they wanted, like, a designated singer.
Yeah. And actually, the first time I brought my wife there was to see Mephistopheles when you guys opened for him.
That was a great show.
And we were sitting down in the chair, and the lead singer from, I always fuck up their names, so don't fucking judge me if you don't. Mephistopheles comes in and he walks in and he sits down to us. He's
you did it.
He goes, hey Jen, and I'm like, no, we're not in Hangar Control. And he goes, oh, sorry. And he gets up and walks away. I was like, well, that was cool, I guess. I mean,
oh yeah, we still talk. Andre's awesome.
Yeah.
Because him and the lead singer Travis from Hub City Stompers did a lot of stuff together, mm-hmm. and we're friends with them too. So we all kind of like
that'd be fun. Yeah, they come through there every time they're in town. So yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's cool.
Yeah,
no, I love the best thing about being in bands is like I can drop names and then get cut off, and I'm still happy.
I'm sorry, I apologize.
I'm just messing with you.
Yeah, you sure mentioned a group. Eric's going to say, yeah, I saw them at wherever.
Oh, that's fine.
And I also have it on vinyl. That's
probably.
I have.
That too.
Yeah, I think I have all their albums on vinyl. So. We need drinks here soon, man.
Yeah. I think that might have to happen.
Anyways, so continue with your history with Hangar Control.
Okay, so with Hangar Control, first of all, with Hangar Control, it's the first time. So in Princess and the Criminals is when I got dubbed Tiff Tantrum. And I don't know how many people have seen Hangar Control shows, but there's a song that we always do, Take It Back, where I actually roll across stage and it looks like I'm going crazy or possessed or something to that extent. And
Jameson.
Oh,
Jameson.
Alcohol comes first, people. Yeah, come on. You know.
That's all right.
Yeah, rum and coke.
All right.
Sorry. Yeah, so when I joined Hangar Control, people just started calling me Tiff Tantrum. And the name had kind of spread throughout bands. It was actually my drummer in my first band, her girlfriend.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So I've always done that. Okay. So the person whom I personify on stage is Karen O from the AAS.
Okay.
Love her. Obsessed with her. Yes. She to me is the epitome of punk rock, not because she's in a punk band, but because of her stage presence and her attitude. And so I would crawl across stage and I would chew up grapes and spit them out at the crowd because I'd seen her do this. Mm-hmm. And so then it got to the point where I would just roll around on stage and would just go freaking nuts. And
I've seen you
do
that before. Yeah.
I still do it, even now, even after all this time, even though it probably hurts a lot worse than it used to.
If you look on the Milestones page, there the picture's you on the crowd.
It's well, and the thing is that for some reason it stuck so much more with No Anger Control just because of the vibe and our music. Yeah. And Tiff Tantrum just sounds like, well, that's an angry name. I mean, Tiff alone already means a fight.
Right.
So when I joined No Anger Control, the best thing about the history with us is that I straight up was like, well, I'm not really that angry. Like, I just, you know, I joined the band. I had never actually done anything that was considered hardcore, old school, anything like that. And I was like, I'm sure I can do it. I'll be fine.
Yeah.
And so then I did it, and I was like, shit, I really am. Like, I was really, I started listening, because when I tried out for them, they gave me the EP that they were singing on. And thank you. And they kept tell me to just listen through it. So that's all I listened to in my car for weeks, because I was like, this is it. This might be the only band I can try out for. I'm just going to have to do this. Like, I have to be good. Like, I got to fit whatever they're doing, because this might be all I get. And not that I didn't think they were good. They were fucking amazing. So I was straight up like, what if I'm not good enough for this band? Because the bands I had been in before had not been like No Anger Control.
Right.
And so I lived in South Charlotte at the time. I'm sure I scared a lot of people. Just screaming in my car, listening along to their stuff. And we had a couple practices, and they were doing this December show at Firewater, which I think used to be The Money up in Rock Hill. And they were doing some Christmas event. And they're like, we're going to have you come, and you're going to do three of our songs. And we're going to see how you do. Well, we get up there, and I come in, and this is already not boding well for me, because I come in, I'm like, I'm with No Anger Control, to the door guy, and he's like, oh, you're doing merch. I'm like, no.
No.
I'm with No Anger Control. Oh, so you're with the band. No, I'm in the band. Like, this is like, I'm sitting there going, oh, shit, this dude already doesn't think I look like I belong in this band. I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to prove it to him. So we get up on stage, and I knew a few people in the crowd that had actually known me from previous bands. And so I felt kind of comfortable. I really liked the guys in No Anger Control, so I was feeling good. I'd only known them maybe like a month or two at this point. And we go to start, and I do like two or three songs with them. And at one point, somebody in the crowd yells out, why are you so old? And now at this point, I'm only 29. They're older than me. But none of us are really all that old when the band started. And my response back was, why can't any of you drink? And that apparently was good for my dudes, because then I was also walking across speakers and screaming out in the crowd. And at the end of the night, you know, they performed some songs by themselves, and I sat down at the bar. And at this point, we had these tall boy koozies, because we'd always sell them at the Milestone. And they come and they hand it to me. And that was their, this is how you're inducted into the band. Oh, I'm handed this tall boy koozie. And so I proceed to go into the bathroom. And I think I'd had a few drinks by this point, so I'm all excited, and I see the poster for the show, and I rip it down, and some girl looks at me, and I stare at her, and I just walk out of the bathroom, and I'm, like, holding the poster up in the air, and I'm pretty sure, like, at that point, I actually still gave a shit about Facebook and went right away and was like, oh, I'm in a band, like, oh, No Anger Control. And from that point on, we just kind of took off. We got about, I think, three or four shows in. They did one show where they were going to play at the Milestone, and it was supposed to be all three-piece bands. And at the end of the show, they were like, we're going to announce you. And it was like All Rise, and I can't remember the other band that was on it. But they played their whole set, and then they had me come up and do No Anger Control. And they're like, hey, thank you guys so much for being here, but we're no longer a three-piece. were now a four-piece, and they brought me up on stage and introduced me, and then I proceeded to sing No Anger Control.
Goosebumps. That's
awesome. That was
awesome. Yeah.
Like, I got to tell you, these guys, I don't think people realize the depth and the brilliance behind my bandmates. Just, they are incredible to work with. And they probably think I'm blowing smoke up their ass when I say
that to them.
But they are insanely good.
Yes.
And I think I added maybe something that they needed to kind of round it out. They already had something.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are just, they're seasoned musicians. This wasn't their first band. They've been doing this shit forever. And I was probably the least experienced coming in. And now we've spent almost 11 years together.
That's awesome.
And I am super grateful and also just really excited that we're still writing and we're still performing and we're not stopping anytime soon. We're not really trying to tour too much anymore, but we're not stopping.
It's time for some new stuff.
Oh,
right?
we're about to
so
start.
I saw you posted that we're performing a new song tonight when you guys opened.
We did
last week. So
it sounded like the Adolescents. It sounded like something they would do.
Oh, sweet.
It's called Disease, and it's really dark and really heavy and kind of sludgy. And the thing is that a lot of our stuff is really super fast, kind of gut punch. Like, if someone just kicked me in the face. But some of our stuff is just really dark and heavy.
I love it.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I do too. last time we saw you guys, I noticed Eli had a No Anger Control patch on his vest, and me and Javier both thought to each other, where's our patch? So we need.
I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, the patch.
So I will tell you this. We had patches, and at one point, Levi even designed patches that he made himself, which I think I still have. They were like iron-ons. Pretty sure it was like the ones where it like melts when you iron it. But
so actually stay on. They fall off after.
Yeah,
a
no.
Time.
The ones that we had for a while, you actually had to sew on. Yeah. So, but I don't know. Levi's always someone that's pushed more for patches. We tend to do more buttons, and that's probably a me thing. Yeah, we do like we rotate out. We have so many different like, and we do that with shirts too. I don't think we've ever had the same design. We don't ever really repeat anything. We always come up with new stuff, and like the buttons we always give out for free. Our stickers are always free too, and we're always come up with new designs for that kind of stuff. But patches, and tank tops. Someone else said we had tank tops once. I still have one, and somebody was like, "You need to bring those back." Because
you know what, it's very rare that bands have tank tops.
Chicks dig the tank tops, though. Chicks dig the tank tops. They liked them. Although apparently a lot of dudes did too, because they're like,
"We dig the chicks in tank tops."
Exactly. See, there's nothing wrong with that.
I had purchased your guys' split LP.
Oh yeah, with Drunk in a Dumpster.
Yes, which was awesome. But I bought it in the little digital download didn't work for me. So I don't know who takes care of that for you guys, but I had messaged somebody in your band, and they sent me a link to all the songs immediately. And
I bet that was Jason.
I was like, wow, that was quick and awesome. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably Jason. He's responsible.
Yeah.
That's why we let him handle that kind of stuff. He handles a lot of the merch, and he designed, like, we actually have our own website, like, literally noangercontrol.com. I'm just going to drop that there.
I saw it today, yeah.
But yeah, Jason handles all that, like everything. He's the one that puts all our music up.
Yeah.
But I'm the one that usually goes out and talks to people, and I'm the one that books the shows, and booking is no fun.
I'm sure it's not.
It's not a party.
I apologize. I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, did I call you Jen when we first started?
It's okay. That's my new sister-in-law's name.
It's Tiff, not...
Yeah,
it's
Tiff. You know, I was wondering. I've seen the messages all week, and I'm like, did I miss something?
I always sign them Tiff, just in case.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I deeply apologize.
Don't feel bad. I might start going by Jen now. Maybe that'll throw people off.
I'm like, who the fuck is Jen in No Anger Control?
I like that.
Who is that?
This could be my secret identity. I mean, it's close to Jem, like Jem and Holograms.
Jem and Holograms, yeah.
And she has a secret identity. I actually dressed like her for one of our shows once, so.
Are you friends with Spider? DJ Spider?
No.
No.
I might be, though.
She does.
Like, I'm just going to throw this out there. There's people I know by face and not by name. All right. So there's possibility.
She's a pretty well-known DJ here in town, but she also is very big into cosplay. And she did a very good.
Gem in the Holograms.
Gem in the Holograms, yes. She was on our show 3-4 episodes ago. Yeah, she did a great gem.
After my heart. I like that. Yes, it was awesome. Yeah. That's honestly, that's how I felt in the first band I was in. I was an accountant. And I'm doing accounting, and then at night I'm playing the soapbox in Wilmington with Murphy's Law. I'm like, I'm Jim.
That's awesome.
Like, yeah.
It's like a double life.
It is.
Yeah, that's her there.
Oh, that is fantastic.
That's not her as Jim, though, is it?
It doesn't matter. No. That's still fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't really mess with the makeups too much anymore.
There we go. Sorry, that's the first part of the episode.
It was coming.
It was building up. Oh, my God. I ate barbecue before I left the house, and now the mic smells like barbecue.
This is why if we'll eat food at Mexican restaurants and then play shows, and I'm like, I'm so fucked on stage.
Oh, Jesus.
Is that at Borders?
Nacho breath while you're playing a show.
That would be the least of it. Trust me. It's not me. Yeah. I'm not throwing anybody in the band under the bus, but it's not me.
Yeah, jeez. No, I'm serious. I'm a sucker for fucking nachos, man. But the thing is with me is if they're made in-house, they have to be made with now being made in the same fryer as like chicken tenders.
100%.
It's like, God damn, man. So I walk in, I'm like, oh, they got nachos. And I ask them, like, oh, sorry. God damn it. I guess I'll, just have a cider and a water. And I'm watch everybody else eat.
That's a really big change from
that is so sad.
Water instead.
It's like one of the saddest things I've ever heard.
Yeah. It's not.
It's not a good replacement for nachos.
Pretty damn close.
No,
yeah.
No. Anyways. Yeah. So what's the future? I know you said you guys are going to take a little break.
During COVID, because we weren't touring
COVID
at the time.
COVID
sucked ass because it's the longest I've ever not played with a band. And it was honestly mentally horrible for me.
Like, what was your first show after COVID?
We played a show at Skylark, and we decided to do all old school. So we played with Southside Punks, which is my drummer's other band, and we played with the Not Likelies, and we had Something Went Wrong open because I had been wanting to play with them, and we actually had a show set up with them that got taken out by COVID. So when we played back, it was packed. Yeah. And it was funny because Jason,
was dying to get out. Yes.
Oh yeah, and so we even waited longer too. Like I think shows have been happening for like a month or two before we finally went and played, and it was worth it. It was packed out, and I think people were just ready to see a lot of like really hard bands.
Yeah.
And after that, we just started playing like crazy again. I will say the one thing about being in a band, it's so great playing shows, but at some points you have to say no because it keeps you from writing, it keeps you from recording.
Right.
And during COVID, we had been like, okay, well, let's take this extra money that we have sitting here and buy recording equipment so we can start putting out like little mini EPs so we can constantly be releasing new stuff. Like 2-3 songs. We had played with this band out of New York, World War IX, that did that. And we're like, every time we played with them, they would have new stuff. And we're like, that's a great idea. And if we have our own recording equipment, then we can do this. So that's what we're trying to do. We have a show July 22nd up at Amos's, and then we have a show August 4th with my beautiful friend Jordan, and it's her last show before she moves. So
I know Jordan.
I love her.
Yes, she is awesome.
Love her. She's incredible. She reminds me of Joan Jett, but way edgier.
Yes, absolutely.
But, yeah, so after that, I think we're going to try and maybe go a month or two without, and just we've got a lot of new stuff. I mean, we're constantly writing. We're not, you know, but it takes so long to put it out when you're prepping for shows.
Right, yeah.
We're a band that actually does practice before our shows. We don't, you know, and if we do roll up, the audience might think it sounds good, but we're like, damn, that sucked. Like, what were we thinking? We should have practiced. So we get so many shows that all we're doing is practicing then. And so we're like, eh. So we got some good material. We really do. Jason and I will put a lot of stuff together. Levi writes a lot, and then we'll just kind of combine our powers. But Jason and I are probably sitting on at least 2 albums worth of stuff.
Wow, awesome! Yeah. Wow, that's awesome. Yeah,
that is awesome.
We never stop. Levi always says we're woodshedding, and I'm like, well, you know,
yeah.
You
need some time to go and write some. So who produces your guys' stuff? Is it you guys or
so the? And I was actually just thinking about him. We used to the split album that we did. And then the most recent Lessons of Mass Destruction, we did at Old House Studios.
Okay.
And that was with Chris Gargas, who unfortunately just passed away.
Rest in peace, brother.
I freaking love that dude. He was incredible. He was so good to the band. I feel like him and John went way back. But he goes way back, or went way back with a lot of people here. And I think after he passed, we were just kind of like, you know, we know people that we could record with. And there's definitely people I'd love to record with. But we kind of want to just see what we can do on our own.
Okay.
We want to see, you know, like, John's really good. You know, our drummer's really good with mixing and producing. Like, he's been doing stuff called living room sessions where he'll have bands come over because we practice in his living room. And he'll have them play and he'll record them. And then put their stuff up online, and he's been doing it for free for them. So if bands want that, you should reach out to my drummer. Like, he's definitely looking to do. He did it with Bogloaf. He's released two of their songs, and it just sounds really good. And John's not just good at recording. He's really good at videography, too. So
okay, cool. Sounds like Ernest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, usually when you're a musician, you're probably doing, like, 10 other things.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, we're all artists in our own right, so.
You brought up Amos's earlier. Are you going to go to that Black Flag show?
So.
I saw him.
This is the way I'm going to put it. When I saw Black Flag, it was Flag because Keith Morris.
Right.
And so probably going to only stick to that.
Okay.
Because I am one of those people that's in the Keith Morris camp. Just saw
I love him. Yeah.
I mean, I just saw Circle Jerks recently with 7 Seconds, and you know, went up to Asheville to see them at Orange Peel, and that's also where I saw Flag.
Yeah.
And I just got to say, like, he was out walking around before the Circle Jerks show when I saw him, and he waved to me and was super freaking nice. Oh,
that's awesome.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I was like, "Yo, dudes, what's up?" And I'm like, "Holy shit!" Because you can't miss Keith Morris with his dreads, all the way down. Yeah. And they're both, I don't know who else it was in the band, because they're both masked up, because this was about a year and a half ago. And, but they responded right away. Super cool. Great show. Lost my entire insides of my purse in that pit because I thought it was closed and it was not. Someone returned my wallet, so we're good with that.
Okay.
But I did lose, and yes, I do still have a checkbook, and I did lose my checkbook, and I had to still go cancel my account. But that's what the Circle
Jerks. Someone was like, "Oh, shit, a checkbook." Actually, somebody probably found it and said, "What is this?"
Yeah, they're like, "What is this odd shaped?" But, you know, that's how you know you're old and still getting in the pit when you lose your checkbook in the pit. But it's okay.
Speaking of the Circle Jerks, they're coming back through here, Charlotte.
Yeah.
With a band I've never seen.
TSOL.
TSOL. I've never seen them. So
I've seen them. I'm actually, that same night, I will be up in Durham seeing Scowl.
Okay.
Which Scowl is on some of their tour.
Scowl was just here, too.
So, yeah, my bassist saw them. I think it was, like, up in Columbia or somewhere like that, or somewhere in South Carolina. But they're playing the Pinhook up in Durham, and I'm going to see Scowl.
Okay.
I'm going. Yeah. Like, I was really disappointed because I wanted to see them with the Circle Jerks because I'd love to see them again.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know, Pinhook, I used to play shows there. Like, I had... With Princess and the Criminals, we did an album release show there, and I'm like, I can go see a band like Scowl at a venue like that. I'm not passing that up.
See, I love live show. For some people, there's church. For us, there's fucking shows. Man.
I had a friend that used to say No Anger Control was her church. So yeah, it's just that I feel that.
Live punk rock or metal or whatever else, man. It
makes me feel alive.
It does, man. Last time Black Flag came through, it was also with Mike V.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, cool. You know, I'll go see him. He sounds a lot like Henry. But this time they're doing My War from front to back. And I was pissed because on that show, they didn't do anything off of My War. And it's my favorite Black Flag album. So I'm like, all right, do I go?
Do you?
I don't know.
It's a thinker.
I've asked Mike V to be on the show, and he's said maybe, so.
Well, if he says yes, then you have to go.
I have to
go. Like, you don't have a choice, especially if he's listening now, Mike. We're sorry. Sorry, dude. I'm in the Keith Morris camp.
No, I saw Henry Rollins at Tremont when he did that Memphis 3 tour.
Yeah.
And actually,
I mean, where haven't we seen Henry Rollins, though?
Right, but he did all
Discovery Channel, Food Network,
Black Flag shows on that bill. And that night, Keith Morris showed up.
Ugh.
And he did, like, Nervous Breakdown. And
that's where it's at
there. I was like, holy
that's
shit.
That's where it's at right there. Now, that makes sense, though, because I could see the two of them still being cool. Yeah. Like,
so I was like, all right. But, I mean, that was a long time ago. You're right, though. I wish we still had venues like Tremont.
Chop Shop.
And the Chop Shop.
You do all
which
ages.
Is also a place I saw Black Flag, which was a terrible show, because it was with that fucking, I don't even know his name. I was like, wow, this is fucking terrible. This is awful. So,
but, you know, the thing is, though, is I got to see bands like GBH and The Business and different things like that.
I saw The Business.
Where I'm hanging out with them. Like, with GBH, I'm hanging out with Colin and, like, all of them afterwards. And I'm like, who can say that? Like, you're Tremont gave me that.
Yeah.
And that was when I first moved here. So I was like, oh, great. This is what Charlotte's like. And then they closed down. So I just left Raleigh where they had the brewery, and the brewery had just closed down. So it's like,
I don't know why. I mean, I guess
I don't get it either.
I guess that type of, I mean, I don't,
because they need parking lots,
more money in condo development.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the sad thing is that not most of them are condos. They become parking lots.
Right.
Parking lots. It's not even like that. It's too. Like, seriously, that song makes sense now. I hate that so much.
I don't mind Joni
Mitchell, yeah.
But the fucking Counting Crows one was
really, oh no, but Joni Mitchell is definitely what I'm referring to.
Okay.
But also, that makes so much damn sense now. I'm like, damn it, she called it.
Yep. Oh, so many good shows at Tremont. I mean, so many.
I played good shows there. No Anger Control played the final show. They had us up on the big stage, and John actually made sure that we were the ones playing when the news came through. Wow. So we ended up on the news, which I'm like, oh man, I don't even remember. I feel like it was posted somewhere.
It was sad.
It was. It wasn't even like, oh yay, we made it to the big stage on the final show ever. So how are you like supposed to be excited for that? You know, yeah. The Anti-Scene was playing, of course, and a lot of good bands were playing that night, and it sucked. I mean, we played so many punk rock picnics there. And probably, like, my third or fourth show with No Anger Control, we opened for Barbed Wire Dolls.
Really?
And Barbed Wire, yeah, and the lead singer was, like, moshing in the pit to us, and she gave me one of their tank tops, and the drummer, their names were so hilarious, Crash, the drummer, he was like, yeah, she never gives anybody anything, but apparently they really liked the band. And that was huge for me.
It was you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably awesome. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, that's awesome. No, you do a lot for that band, and I think that's why a lot of especially my daughter, my youngest daughter, loves No Anger Control, because,
well, that makes me happy,
because it's a female fronted punk band. So yeah.
Well, I also actually try to talk to the audience afterwards too. Yeah. So
the first time I saw you, you gave everyone in the fucking audience hugs.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Real sweaty and gross, like. Yeah. And then I'll give, like, there was two kids that came out to our show at Snug, and they had seen us. We played up at the Spokeasy, and both are 18. They're starting a band, which I'm actually really stoked about. I'm going to be putting them on a show with us.
Okay.
Hands down. They gave me their demo through text message that night, and listened to it 3 times on the way home, and it's real raw and real gritty, but damn it, it's good.
That's good shit, though.
And they're both 18, and they're both just figuring it out, but they knew how to pogo. All right, how many? Like, they're at the Spokeasy, and they're, like, pogoing through, and we caught it on video, and we caught it on camera, and so when they came up and introduced themselves to me at Snug, we're like, we were those two kids pogoing, and I'm like, oh, shit. Because, you know, I just don't, I didn't even know, they're both 18, and I'm like, but their music is just so solid, and they were so nice. So I went and grabbed a bunch of merch and gave it to them.
That's awesome.
I mean, that's just, I've met so many younger kids at our shows, especially when we used to play Tremont, and we've never, our money always goes right back into our merch, or we'll even give our money to like the touring bands. Like, we're not in this to make money. We're in this to have our stuff heard. And the only way you're going to have it heard is if you're willing to be like, here, take this album, or take it. Like, we've been told we charge too little for our, you know, record, and we probably do.
See, that's always a point I've brought up, though. Punk rock kids don't have a lot of money.
No.
So if you're going to buy a record, it's got to be.
Yeah, I think ours is like affordable. Maybe like $7, maybe.
Something like that, yeah.
It's cheap. Yeah. Like, and I don't even remember who it was. Like, you should sell that for more. And I'm like, but I would rather them hear it.
Yeah, when I bought your split LP, which, by the way, I bought from your new husband.
Oh,
congratulations.
Yeah.
I get married.
Yeah, he's in a good band, too.
I was like, yeah, the
AMFMs,
which he gave me their record. It was funny. I was at my wife's.
We did their release show, actually, for that record. Yeah, we played that.
I was at my wife's work function, and he was working there, and he was bartending. And I'm like, oh,
when
oh,
he
shit.
Still did that,
I was
yeah.
like, Pete, he goes, you still like punk rock? I'm like, oh, yeah.
How could you ever stop?
And he goes, hold on a minute. And I went and sat down in my seat, and he brought me a fucking record. I'm like, hell yeah, that's awesome.
That is why I married him, because he's like me. Hey, you still into punk rock? And I bring you a record. Yeah. So
I love Pete. Shout out to Pete, and congratulations on getting married. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. I've known Pete for over 20 years now, I think. He was one of the first people I met when I moved down here. He was one of the people that turned me on to a lot of really good punk rock music. And I was the person, and I'm going to say this, that turned him on. I won't say he ever listened to him.
He might.
He discovered the Insane Clown Posse because of me.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I'm going to have to ask him about this.
So when I first moved down
here. Not to say that I didn't ever dip my toes in that pool. But.
Well, in 96, they weren't.
Me neither.
They weren't who they are now. They were just local.
Oh, yeah.
They were just, because I moved down here from.
I mean, I would have been. Michigan. We're not placing ages here, but I've been like 13 at the time.
I moved down here, and they didn't have any of their shit available in the store we were working at. So I had to special order all my Insane Clown. It was just the ICP back then, but I had to order them all. And they're like, yo, what is this? I'm like, yo, you don't know who these guys are. So I got him and Ryan Sullivan.
Did you get him? Oh, God, no.
I got him and Ryan. Not, I won't say that they liked them, but I believe they took a trip with me to a store to go get some food, and I
did
played.
They get Fuegos? No, I'm kidding.
No. And,
I was waiting for it. I've been like, have you convinced them to that level?
No. They have. I've never handed them a Fuego. No.
Oh.
But anyways, congratulations.
Thank
That's
you.
That's fun. Yeah, Pete's a great guy.
He's the only person who I think could still let me be. Whatever this is, and be okay with it. I mean, he saw me. It was fantastic when we played that show last week at Snug, and I'm getting up in the pit, and, I'm getting slammed down. Like, I got slammed down a couple times in that pit, and all he said to me was, you should probably calm down a little bit.
Pizza. Back of the crowd guy.
It was fantastic. Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure he probably got footage of all of it. And I just kind of looked at him, and I was like, look, I can still get in the pit. I'm going to do it as long as I can. And he said, I understand.
Yeah.
So that was nice.
I've had so many – I got hurt in the pit so many – so when I fractured my elbow, I went to the doctor, and then my doctor was from Poland.
Oh, even better.
And I walked in, I'm like, oh, I hurt my elbow. And she goes, how did you hurt your elbow? I said, I was moshing. She goes, what is moshing? What is moshing? And she leaves the room, and she tells her nurse, I got hurt moshing. And then they all come and they're like, what show were you at when you got hurt moshing? I was like, I think it was Seven Dust. I'm not even sure what show it was, but yeah. Oh, my
That's
God.
That's great.
Yeah. And it was all at Tremont.
It's always, Tremont definitely got me hurt a couple times.
The last show I saw there, I think, was Gwar with the new lead singer.
Which one?
The guy.
I know at one point they had a female who actually played with Reagan Youth then. Yeah. I think she's still with Reagan.
It was the guy with the antlers. I forget his name. He was the guy who used to be Brutus.
Oh, yeah. Okay. When,
yeah, yeah.
I know who you're talking about. Up,
yeah. Excuse me. Great show. Great show. I went home full of blood and gore, and I fell asleep on the couch. Woke up the next morning, and my wife's like, oh, my gosh. She's like, Jesus Christ. Go shower before the kids wake up and see you covered in blood on the couch.
Him. Yeah. You scare them. That's fantastic.
Yeah, that was the last show I saw at Tremont, though.
Oh, that's the best part is because I actually work with kids, and not currently, but I was with a family for 7 years. They knew I was in No Anger Control. Apparently, they played some of our stuff for them once, and I, like, literally as soon as the boys were like, yeah, we heard some of your music, I stopped, and I was like, what songs?
Oh, wait a minute.
Because I know which ones are marked with the E for explicit lyrics and which aren't. But I don't know if the parents didn't care, if they were just kind of like, oh, this can't actually be her. I don't know, but they definitely knew.
I think last time I spun here, I played some No Anger Control. I'm pretty sure I did.
Fantastic.
And
I don't really listen to too much of our stuff, which kind of sucks because some of it's really good.
I don't listen to our podcast too often, but when I do, I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it's if I'm having one of those moments where I'm like, you know what, I wonder what this album sounds like to me now, and I'll just play it, and I'm just like, wow, man, I'm a lot more fierce than I thought.
You certainly encourage moshing, not
absolutely
so much by saying mosh, but with the, yeah.
Well, you know, and it's funny, too, because when Jason especially will write stuff, he'll write breakdowns, and he's looked at me before, and he's like, I want these motherfuckers to be picking up change.
Yeah, so, it's funny, because Pete...
You'll see it.
Pete has tapped me on the shoulder before it shows, and he goes, this is the hardcore breakdown right there. Watch.
Yeah.
Listen.
Oh, he knows. He's seen us enough times. Yeah. But and we do. We literally will put them. I mean, we consider ourselves old school for that reason.
Absolutely.
And my bassist, the band that he was really into growing up was Sheer Terror, and we got to play with them recently at Skylark.
Wow. Yeah.
And you know, once we played, they came up afterwards. They get up on stage and they're like, there really should be more females front in hardcore bands. And
absolutely.
I feel like I was outside because I was dying after our set. But Jason was like, I wish I would have filmed that. Because this was like the band for him and was like the band he saw growing up. And they actually really were digging what we did.
That's a good feeling.
It is a good feeling. We've done that. You know, we've played with Agent Orange and CJ Ramone and Reagan Youth and DRI and MDC, and like I could just keep going, and it's just
speaking of DRI.
Yeah,
we'll be here soon.
Now you know what? Now DRI. When we played with them, they're friends with the lead singer from Drunk in a Dumpster. That's how we ended up getting that.
Oh,
show.
Really? Yeah. No shit. Oh, yeah. Wow.
That's how we got the David. David knew them, and seriously, super nice guys. But I got to tell you, the nicest band that I think we played with was MDC.
Really?
Yeah, okay. They were just unbelievably just nice and courteous, and I feel like that was another one that we met from David and Drunk in a Dumpster. He really knew a lot of people.
So who are some of your punk rock influences?
Well, the one that really got me into it was Joey Ramone. Mostly because when I heard the Ramones, you know, it was real relatable because my parents were old enough that I was growing up on like 60s music.
Yeah.
And so to be hearing stuff that just sounded like the music I knew already being sped up was easy for me to kind of get into, but it was so good and it was so much faster. And I was just like, this is great. But the reason I ended up really digging him was when I finally saw him, because I heard him first. I had never seen Joey Ramone. I listened to him. And then I saw him, and I was like, look at this freaking weirdo.
Fucking jealous.
I was like, oh, my God, look at this freaking weirdo. No, I didn't see him live. I saw him on recording. Yeah. Trust me, I'm too young for that.
Yeah, he's like...
Anyone that saw him, but he was just... He was weird. And I was like, I'm weird. And I'm like, but these guys are freaking huge. So then I realized, well, if he can do this, then I can do this. Mm-hmm. And so the Ramones really skyrocketed me into believing that I actually had potential to be in a band.
That's awesome.
Then I heard Minor Threat. Minor Threat is what led me to believe that I could do any version of punk rock. Because Ian MacKaye, seriously,
I love him.
When it comes to like hardcore for me, everyone's always like, oh, you just like fall back a minor threat. I'm like, it's because when I watched some of these documentaries and when I watched American Hardcore, what Ian MacKay said in that documentary, I was like, I feel this word for word. Mm-hmm. This is why I belong in a band like No Anger Control.
Yeah.
And I just understood where he was coming from in a way that I didn't realize that I felt. Because I had always been doing everything but hardcore. You know, and I'd always felt like my calling was 77 punk, and I could have done a little bit more harder, like the Dead Boys or the Germs. I would have easily fallen into that camp. But I got to tell you, Ian MacKay probably ended up being outside of one other human being. Ian MacKay is definitely one of my biggest influences, just because, number one, he always stuck to what he believed in, even if people talk shit to him about
it. Well, tell your friend, fuck you.
Exactly.
I love that shit.
And if you really want to be angry, I'm Seeing Red is the anthem for the most angry moments in any part of your life. And I've just, every time that I watch American Hardcore, number one, I'm like, oh, Ian MacKay. Number two, I see Jimmy G, and I'm like, played with him twice. And that's how I know where I'm supposed to be. Yeah. And it's not just one single band. It's like I have been spanned through bands and ended up playing with some of these legends and other bands. But the moment for me was when we played with CJ Ramone, because that's the closest I'm going to get.
Yeah.
And as we're talking after the set, he puts his arm around me and he's kind of talking to me and he's like, you have what it takes. And I laugh.
Oh, shit.
That's and awesome. He's like, I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. Yeah. He's like, you have what it takes. And that was huge for me because I knew how close him and Joey were.
Yeah.
And that was the closest I was ever going to get to Joey Ramone. And he was cool. He was really, CJ Ramone was a really awesome human being.
Have you met Johnny? I'm sorry. Is it Johnny? No.
Marky.
I'm sorry. Marky.
I feel like Marky. Pete played a show up at CBGB's more than once. And one of them, Marky, was at with Arturo Vega.
Oh, yeah.
So I haven't, but Pete came real close.
Yeah.
And Pete also met Cheetah Chrome, so we're...
Oh, wow.
I know, right?
Remember Fat City?
Now, I was never here for Fat City, but I've heard the tales, and it makes me really jealous.
I walked
let me tell
there
you.
One night, I'm like, that looks like Marky Ramone on drums. And they go,
that is Marky Ramone on drums.
I was like, oh, shit, okay.
But people don't realize, like, we had...
He was a dick that
we, night. I'm sure he was. That's why I don't think Marky would like me. I think he'd be a shithead to me. Like, I don't know. In his little New York accent that I will not try and recreate. But I will tell you, though, I feel like... People act like just because the Ramones are big that they can sit on them and that, I think they've influenced more bands than most people.
And it's not just funk bands. There's a lot of
bands. Or even indie type bands.
Yes.
Like, there's this band I really dig. Jason Schwartzman's brother is in called Rooney. And their biggest influences are the Cars and the Ramones. And I'm like, oh, cool. Those are two of my biggest
influences. Rooney sounds like a... baseball band.
Rooney was actually named after the principal from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, so that makes me really happy.
That's awesome.
You can't not dig that. Yeah. Like
one of the greatest films of all time. Yeah.
Well, and they played up at Neighborhood Theater, and I met the lead singer, super nice, and just great, great band. But if people would probably be like, "Really, you listen to that band?" I'm like, "Well, kind of at points sound like the Ramones." Like,
if you heard my playlist any day, you'd be like, oh my god.
Oh, you would hear Lay Beat, Depeche Mode, New Order, Echo and the Bunnymen. Oh, here's some punk.
Punk and hip hop and all kinds of
shit.
Oh,
I love hip hop too.
Oh, Jesus.
Huge.
We just did a
fan
hip hop episode with the owner of Salud. I did not know that motherfucker knew so much about hip hop. He blew me away.
I probably don't know as much as he does or even close.
He named all of his pizzas after Outkast songs.
Okay, I do love Outkast.
Yeah, I was like, wow, that's pretty dope.
I will
almost
tell
all of his pizzas.
I will tell almost all of them.
There's a Cypress Hill in there, too.
Yeah. I'd also eat that pizza.
Latin lingo. I love Cypress Hill.
Oh, Cypress Hill is honestly one of those bands that I hope carries on just like Beastie Boys has.
I've seen them twice.
I've never seen him. I've seen him.
It was funny. I saw him open for Blink 182, mm-hmm. and all these kids are in the audience. All these kids are in the audience, and they're up on the stage blazing. I'm like,
yeah,
cool. And then like the parents are like, oh my god, they're smoking weed. We gotta go. We have to go get a drink at the bars.
Cypress Hill, yeah. Like, come on. That's literally all I think of when I hear them.
Last time we went to go see him,
yes, exactly. Insane in the Membrane.
We got fucking high as shit. And we went to go see him at the Fillmore. We show up, and they canceled.
They were too high to play.
No, no. Be Real's mom died.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, fuck. I'm like,
No, you can't be mad about that.
But I was like,
look,
I can't go home.
I'm just going to be here.
I cannot go home.
I'm just
going
to be here.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so we want to.
They're big into craft beer, too.
They are, yeah.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah.
That doesn't surprise me at all. If you could put, like, a show with them in, like, a Tribe Called Quest, then I'd be really happy.
I saw Five Dog at Tremont.
I saw, who was it that I saw was coming through that I was really excited? There's not, because I think the best hip-hop, I guess I consider him hip-hop now, is Run the Jewels. I really like them.
Speaking of that, next Saturday, Killer Mike's in town.
Oh, see? That's what I'm talking about. But what I've always told people is punk and hip-hop are kind of like, we're wrapped around each other.
Right.
We're angry for the same reasons. We just present it differently.
You're absolutely right, yes.
And we're probably all doing way too nefarious things behind the scenes, together.
How are we on time there, Ernest? We good? Look at that. Run the Jewels. So what was your first punk rock album that you ever bought?
Oh, wow.
With
I'm going to really have to... With my own money?
With my own money,
it would have been Ramones, Rockets to Russia. Yeah. Like, and it was... You know, vinyl, obviously.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember where I got it from. I just remember seeing it and, like, I have to have this.
Yeah.
And I don't even think I had a record player. And I still was like, I have to have this.
You know,
and I still have it. I don't think I've ever even opened it.
Wait, your husband, Pete, has never let you...
I haven't opened it. I had it way
before him.
Oh, I'm sure he does. I'm sure he does. Now, I've had, and I'm pretty sure what I ended up doing was buying another one and opening that one.
Okay.
But I felt like, you know what I mean? Like, I was so obsessed with the Ramones at this point that something in me, because my dad was a record collector, something in me was like, no, you keep this one, you get another. And I think I got another one used. Like, I don't even remember what I did. All I know is that was it for me, and I would stare at it and just be like, I'm going to be them.
See, I love looking through that bargain bin and finding stuff. I went to Premium Sound last week. Not everyone knows who MC Search is, but I found MC Search's Back to the Grill. It was like the very last record in that bin. That album was the first time Nas was ever on any
recorded
album.
Nas.
I was like, yo, no one knows this. This was Nas's first ever time on vinyl, man. I bought it for... $5.
Yeah, and that's when you find those gems because people have no clue. They have no clue.
I was almost not going to go through the whole bin. It was the very last record.
You have to. Because that's what I usually will do.
I sat there, I was talking to the owner, which we argued about Fishbone opening up for Parliament in a few weeks. And he's like, I can't find...
That would have been a great show.
He goes, I can't find anything that says Fishbone is actually open for Parliament. I said, trust me, they are opening for Parliament, and I will be at that show. I have to go.
That's a really good
Fishbone
lineup.
Is opening for Parliament.
Yeah, what the...
Yes.
Where is this?
At the Fillmore.
When?
Next month,
okay, I have to go to that show. I don't know how Pete doesn't know about that show.
And they're advertising it as Parliament's last tour.
Oh,
so,
then I definitely have to go.
I mean, I've always wanted to see Parliament cheers or, whatever to Mr. Clinton. He's from Kannapolis. I always thought he was from, California or something.
No.
He's a North Carolina native.
There's a lot of bands that unfortunately are North Carolina natives.
Yeah.
We all wound up here somehow. Yeah. I don't know what we're doing, but
I mean, it's not a bad state to live in. We don't have We don't have like snow. I mean, we get like one snow a year.
Well, when I first moved here, we did.
We don't have
We
don't have earthquakes. We don't have really bad hurricanes. Yeah. This is a nice state to live in.
We got the mountains and the beach.
Yeah, unless you're on the coast.
We have both.
Yeah, I went to ECU. Trust me, I know.
Yeah. I mean, here in Charlotte, it's a 2-hour trip to the mountains or a 3-hour trip to the beach.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I will say you're not wrong because, I mean, when I was in Greenville, I was playing with bands that got big because Valiant Thor.
Yeah.
I went to school with Herbie and Benny. Like, we've played with them a few times. And then Future Islands, they started in Greenville. And I was flipping through stuff, I think, on YouTube the other night, and their stuff came through, and I was like, damn it, I played in a living room with these guys. And then years later, I see them on Letterman, and I'm like, what the hell? Like,
I know those guys.
I know. Are you kidding? Exactly. Yeah. At the time, I was like, whatever. Yeah. Like, these guys are what? And they had started out with some band called Art Lord and the Self-Portraits. They were all art students, and their music kind of reflects that, and it's not punk, and it's still good, but it's like, I play in the living room with these guys. And then, of course, you've got the Avett Brothers, I think it was a street that my second band, Princess and the Criminals, practice on. They wrote a song about.
Really?
Yeah, Laura Lane. It's about a street in Greenville, North Carolina.
Wow.
And I don't even listen to them, but damn it, I went to a school and played in an area where three bands that actually got really big at the time I was there.
I like their early stuff.
That
song about Brooklyn I played for my daughter.
Oh yeah,
that's your name.
These were people that I was like hanging out with when I was first starting in bands.
Wow.
And I'm just like, this is insane.
There's a lot of
sometimes it comes out of that college scene.
Oh, exactly.
These college towns, these college bands, these guys get together, they find each other, and it's just magic. It's gold.
Yeah. I had a friend that asked me, she's like, should I move to Raleigh or Charlotte? I was like, Raleigh. And she goes, why? I said, there's a much better music scene there. I said, there is traffic, but Charlotte's turned into like fucking assholes.
Well, what I will say is, because we did that, you know, when I left Greenville and moved to Raleigh and started the BAMFs there, that's exactly why we were there, because there was a band called the Capulets who had then the lead singer and I think maybe one other member became the Love Language, and they're playing Coachella and doing stuff like this. Mm-hmm. So we're like, okay, Future Islands moved there and then went to Baltimore and got real big. Valiant Thor moved there. They get signed to Volcom and we're like, okay, Raleigh.
Yeah.
And then we get to Raleigh and everything gets closed down. The dive bar shuts down. We played their last show. Brewery gets shut down. You know, I think Slim's might have been the one place we played the most, and they're still open. It was kind of divided when we were there, and honestly, I felt like Charlotte had more to offer, and that's why I ended up moving here.
Really? Okay.
Because punk-wise, like with what I was doing with music, I had more here.
Yeah, it's more of like an indie scene
out
there. Yeah,
it is, and that's why some of those bands are still there, still doing that thing, and but I will say that we had a good following there, but when I came and played at the Milestone and I just saw the way that the punk crowds were here, I was like, all right, Charlotte, I see you.
The fucking Milestone's the shit, man.
Yeah, well, and that doesn't hurt that you're playing at this, like, I mean, what, they're older than CBGBs.
Yeah.
Like,
I think they're the oldest.
They're now the oldest. They have to be the
oldest. Well, they were always older than CBGB, but now they are the longest running.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm pretty sure they are the longest running, and that might actually be whole country. Like, I don't know if it's just East Coast. I think it might actually be.
I've heard East Coast, but maybe.
I mean,
maybe
I'm trying
nationwide.
To think.
We almost lost them twice, but they
yeah, well, it, they, so, yeah. They like those people who are like, I'm going to quit smoking. They're like, nope, never mind. I'm still good. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I'm glad we still have the fucking Milestone.
Me too, because that's a staple, and that honestly, that was the place I was going to the most when I first moved here, just because I realized that was where I was gonna find my people.
Yeah. Last show I saw there, I think, was Off With Their Heads.
That's right, I forgot.
Jesus
they
Christ,
through. I forgot they came through.
I was up front, and I forget what song they were doing, and I was fucking singing that song at the top of my goddamn lungs at the front of the stage. and I got fucking blasted from behind, and I ended up on top of the fucking lead singer.
And that's just how it goes?
Yeah, I was like, all right.
And it's not a punk show until either the singer's on top of you or you're on top of them.
He just kept playing, though. He didn't even press the beat, so I was like, all right.
That's how you know. Yeah. That's how you know.
It was a great show.
Yeah. Like, I love that. That's my favorite thing about punk bands.
It was them and Dollar Signs, which I thought was cool because they opened for Dollar Signs.
I love them.
Off. Put their heads open for Dollar Signs, and I've been trying to get Dollar Signs on the show. So if you're fucking listening, dude.
Hey, Eric Button, if you're listening, come hang out and do a show with both of us.
I've been trying to get them on. It'll happen.
It'll happen.
They keep saying yes, but they won't nail down a date. So,
well,
eventually.
I'm not going to throw out shit, but Eric, let's make this happen.
Yeah. Anyways, I think that's it for the week. You said you got a show at Amos's, and
we're playing with buddies of mine, Lana Day. My buddy Joey, who I've known since I moved here, he's playing Violent Life, Violent Death, and this is his new project, and he's actually one of the people I know records. So if you're ever looking for some good recordings, Park Productions, I'm like, this dude works hard.
There you go.
I've seen him rebuild a studio twice in his basement because it flooded once.
Wow.
Like, hardcore about what he does, really good people, and so they said they wanted to have more of, like, a punk hardcore band on their show, because they're more metal, and, you know, he's always done more metal, which we're always good with, because we fit with that kind of stuff, too. Yeah. But we're playing with them and Fractured Frames, and I don't want to forget the Dirty Lowdown, and I'm pretty stoked.
All right.
We like doing shows like that because we get to show another crowd what we got.
Yeah.
And that's July 22nd?
Yeah, July 22nd at Amos's. Doors at 7, show at 8. We play Amos's. Second, and I will eat your face off.
Cool. And I'll be here on the 16th spinning some tunes. So.
And I think I saw was tickets are only 10 bucks.
Yeah, they're cheap.
Oh, really?
If you get them now,
get
them now. I think they're $12 day of show, and that's still good.
Yeah.
That's still good. But we'll put on a good show, and I have a feeling we'll play that new tune again.
I love Amos's because, one, there's air conditioning.
Yeah, it's a good stage. I'm excited. I haven't played the new. This is the newer.
I was going to say, I haven't been to the new Amos's.
I've only played the old one. So.
And it's not Fillmore prices for drinks.
No,
so,
it's not.
Yeah.
And I think they treat the bands really well, too. They do. So that's always important.
I think the last show I saw there was the Aggrolites. That was.
Well, that's a good show.
I think that's a show. This is a show I need to make.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you for listening. Adios.
See ya.
A huge shout out to our gracious host, Tommy's Pub. Located at 3124 East Wade Drive, Tommy's Pub is a small neighborhood bar that's big on music and community. Go to Tommy's Pub's Facebook page where they regularly provide updates about upcoming events to include weekly open mic night, karaoke, and live music from some of the best up-and-coming bands in the Queen City. Thank you, Tommy's Pub, for hosting M-Vibes Podcast.
We have a lot of interesting episodes coming up about music's most interesting topics, but we want to hear from you and what episodes you'd like to hear. If you have an idea for anything we should talk about, email us at mvibespodcast@gmail.com. This episode was produced by BWM Productions. If you like our podcast, please help us by rating and reviewing us on your favorite listening platform. And follow us on Instagram and Facebook at mvibespodcast. Come on and join in the conversation.